At a time when the NFL draft is coming into focus around the league, there seems to be some degree of drama with the 49ers. This has to do with the social media activity of wide receiver Deebo Samuel, who is sending signals that he is disgruntled about something. What exactly is not quite clear. We discuss Deebo, the 49ers draft needs, and much more on this episode of 49ers Talk.
Welcome to another edition of 49ers Talk on NBCSportsBayArea.com. Introducing your host, Matt Mayoko.
Yes, this is 49ers Talk, brought to you by Big O Tires. And we welcome in someone who is not new to talking about the 49ers, not new to writing about the 49ers, but is new to 49ers Talk. It's Jennifer Lee Chan.
Hey, Matt. So glad to be here.
Yeah, you know what? People call you JLC, right? Have they called you JLC your entire life?
No, that was a new thing that started when I started doing this job, when I started covering the 49ers. There were other people on social media that had Jennifer Chan taken. So all my handles are Jennifer Lee Chan, which is kind of a mouthful. So I think it was Tim Kawakami that started calling me JLC.
I think I remember that. Yes.
Yeah. And it just kind of stuck. So
here so here's the problem. I'm big into like voice dictation on my phone, and people around me while I do it get very annoyed because you hear the little ping and then I'm going, you know, text so-and-so. But anytime that someone says, you know, like my boss will say, hey, who's writing this story? I'll say JLC is taking it or whatever. It always comes out Chelsea. So in my phone, like you are Chelsea because it doesn't recognize JLC.
That's pretty funny.
So anyway, here we go. We haven't taped a 49ers Talk podcast since Laura Britt goes over to the Giants full time. She's crushing it over there, of course, on NBC Sports Bay Area with pregame and postgame. But there seems to be some drama here with the 49ers as of late. And as far as I can tell, either Deebo Samuel is upset with the 49ers or he wants people to believe he's upset with the 49ers by not clarifying exactly what his feelings are. So we're going to talk a lot about Deebo Samuel. This is a situation where he's been in the league 3 years as a second round pick in 2019. He is now for the first offseason eligible for a contract extension, and he should get it because he is grossly underpaid. He should get it this offseason. He should get it before training camp begins. I don't think there's any big rush to get this done, but it certainly seems as if this offseason is not proceeding like he wants it to.
Yeah, there was such, I guess, angst on social media. A lot of fans were very surprised. He took all of his 49ers pictures off of his social media, off of Instagram, off of Twitter. And that always makes everybody a little nervous. So with no pictures of anything 49ers, there's always, and he unfollowed them as well. So that's kind of a big thing. And we've seen it a lot throughout the league. And when that happens, I think everybody gets a little nervous. So he also had a tweet that was like, oh, okay then. So very cryptic. A lot of people are questioning what it actually means. And we have not found out what it exactly means yet. So
yeah, was that the, oh, okay then, was that in response to anything? Was that in response to the Stephon Diggs contract or any contract that was signed at that point? Do we know?
About a few hours after the whole Stephon Diggs thing happened. So I don't know why that would have been a surprise to him. Stephon Diggs got a great contract like Davante Adams and Tyreek Hill, you know, not as big as those two guys, but he got a big contract. I don't know why that would necessarily upset him or, you know, make him irked, so to speak. But that's the tweet that came out maybe a few hours later. I think it came out the same day, but I don't think it's the contract that necessarily made him upset. I think there's a little something else to it.
Yeah, because to me, and we talked about this a couple of weeks ago on the podcast, was that the contract on its surface appears to be pretty easy to get done. just because of the comps that are out there. You know, Tyreek Hill, Davante Adams, Stephon Diggs, they all kind of fit nicely into this very small window where, you know, I would think that the 49ers would consider it an insult to offer a deal less than $20 million a year for Deebo Samuel. And I don't know that he's going to be making more than Tyreek Hill. And when you look at those contracts, you know, there's on some of these deals, there's kind of some fluff years at the end that bump up the average per year. But, you know, I would think you're looking at something in that, you know, 21, 22 to $23 million range. And so there's not a whole lot of wiggle room there. And I think the 49ers would understand that's the kind of deal that you're looking at. I would think that Deebo Samuel and his side would be looking at that's the kind of deal you're looking at. The only thing that I can think of would be when you look at the abundance of wide receivers every year and how new wide receivers are coming into the league every year and thriving, that it could be that some organizations, and I'm not saying the 49ers are one of these, but some organizations might just decide, you know what, we'd rather just kind of replenish our wide receivers, you know, in the draft. And when it gets to that point where they're up for big contracts, maybe try to get some draft picks and move on. So Kyle Shanahan has said that everybody is, you know, they'll listen to anybody, any team that's willing to talk trade. You know, they're willing to trade anybody for the right price. And I know his joke has been including me, not me, but Kyle Shanahan, of course. Uh-huh. So you know that if a team came to the 49ers, they would listen. And, you know, when you look at the Kansas City Chiefs, that kind of came out of nowhere a little bit when they traded Tyreek Hill to the Miami Dolphins, but the Dolphins gave up a lot to get him, both in the contract they gave Tyreek Hill, but also the draft pick compensation that they gave the Chiefs. So that's where I think the 49ers would have to say, I doubt that the 49ers are going out there, dialing the phones of 31 teams saying, hey, Deebo Samuel's out here. Do you want him? That would get out and that would be, you know, big news. Mm-hmm. But if a team is willing or wants Deebo Samuel, I mean, they have the 49ers phone number. The question would be, what would it take for the 49ers to seriously consider trading Deebo Samuel?
Well, and I think one of the things that's really important is that you look at where the 49ers pick. They don't have any first round picks at all. Their first pick is at 61 in the second round. So if you want to replenish your team and your roster, they can't do it until very late. I know they had in mind that they were going to trade Jimmy Garoppolo, get a first round pick for him, or maybe a second, maybe a first and a second, you know, who knows what was on the table before he had his surgery. But when you look at how this draft will play out, they don't have any picks till the end of the second day. We know that they want to replenish the defensive line. You want to find somebody that's opposite of Nick Bosa because Dee Ford isn't going to play anymore. That's a ton of money as well. I think that really hampers them. I think they always want to get better in their roster, and you look at where the top guys fall into this draft, and they're lucky that it's actually pretty deep. There's a lot of defensive linemen. There's a lot of secondary. I've talked to a couple of draft guys and they said this is the deepest draft of edge rushers that they've seen in a really long time. But you also don't want to wait until the third day, you know, second day, third round to do that. So I think maybe that's what they're thinking. I mean, the draft picks that Miami had to give up, a first, a second, and a fourth this year, and a fourth and a sixth in 2023. So they gave up a lot. The Chiefs got a lot. So they're going to be able to build their roster back up. They've got a lot of key pieces already, which is kind of where the 49ers are. They've got, you know, a few spots where they need to kind of replenish, and that's what they need to do in the draft.
Yeah, I mean, Deebo Samuel had a great year. And you know, he got off to a really good start as a wide receiver. I'm not sure that anybody puts him in that same class of wide receiver as some of the guys we're talking about, Devontae Adams, and you know, Cooper Kupp, and you mentioned Tyreek Hill. He hasn't had that consistency. But so that's, you know, that's something. Can he be that consistent wide receiver? Where he was so valuable to the 49ers is that he is a, basically a running back playing wide receiver. And it, it's not that he's, you know, great going up against man coverage, or he's just this nuanced route runner and all that. He's just really good at, you know, the 49ers scheme him open. And then once he has the ball in his hands, I mean, good luck bringing him down. So he's a different style than these other wide receivers. The question that the 49ers have to answer is, you know, do they want to devote so much cap space to Deebo Samuel at that position when they already have this, this roster full of guys who are top paid at their positions? I mean, I'm looking at it here. I mean, they got the top paid fullback and Kyle Juszczyk, which isn't a big deal because fullbacks don't get paid like some other positions, but they also have the top paid tight end in George Kittle, the top paid offensive tackle, offensive lineman period with Trent Williams. They have the number two paid linebacker in Fred Warner. And then, you know, Eric Armstead, now that he's considered, I think, a defensive tackle, he's top 10 in the league there on a contract that he signed several years ago. So do they also want a top five paid wide receiver? You know, I look over at the Rams and I think, you know, everybody is going to be looking at the Rams, 49er fans, certainly looking at the Rams, like, because that's kind of the template right now of a team that at least the appearances are that they go out and they pay everybody and they find all this cap room and everything else. They have the number one paid defensive tackle, it's Aaron Donald. They have the number one paid cornerback, Jalen Ramsey. They have the number five paid quarterback, Matthew Stafford. And then that's it. That's it for the top five or top 10. So the 49ers have to decide. And then while we're talking about wide receivers, I mean, they got Cooper Kupp on a bargain, you know, a couple of years ago, signing him to that contract. He and Allen Robinson are like 15, 16 when it comes to the wide receiver pay scale. So what the 49ers have to determine is their money best spent on Deebo Samuel and the high price that he would command when you also talked about it's a deep draft, but it's also a deep draft at wide receiver. And that's something where we've seen time and time again. I mean, the Vikings get rid of Stephon Diggs a couple of years ago, trade him. And, you know, they haven't, you know, I don't think wide receiver is a huge issue with them because Justin Jefferson steps in, you know, first round draft pick, and he's putting up big numbers. So that's what the 49ers have to weigh is their money spent? Is their cap room allocation better used at other positions? Like we talked about Nick Bosa. I mean, they're going to have to pay him sooner than later. Is it better spent on edge rusher? Is it better spent at wide receiver? And where I think the 49ers have perhaps made a mistake this offseason is that they've spoken as if they're done deals. You know, they haven't let that possibility creep in that either Nick Bosa or Deebo Samuel is getting away. John Lynch has said, you know, we've allocated money for them. You know, we've budgeted money for both of them. So when they say that, you just take it at its word and go, oh, okay. They know what it's going to cost to retain those players and they're willing to do it. They have the cap room to do it. All right, let's move on to the next thing on the agenda.
Now, Matt, what do you think about the fact that Kyle Shanahan kind of does that with running backs? Like he's never, I don't know how, if he's ever given a running back or been a part of a team that's giving a running back a huge second contract. Not that they get them as much as wide receivers do, but the fact that Kyle Shanahan can scheme an offense around a player, put him in the best position, like Deebo Samuel became more of a running back because they didn't have Elijah Mitchell. He wasn't healthy. Trey Sermon wasn't doing what they needed to do. Jeff Wilson was hurt. So Deebo Samuel became this guy who was a playmaker, a running back for the team. Kyle is so good at scheming players into positions to make them the most productive. His confidence level and being able to do that, does that help them not need to give the skill players as those big contracts and they can allocate it somewhere else because he's so good at doing that?
Well, in running back, certainly. You know, they don't need to pay big money for a running back because I mean the track record is apparent with what they've had five different leading rushers in five seasons. And I don't think the only point where I can really remember thinking like, wow, running back is an issue was last season, you know, when Elijah Mitchell was injured. And that's really what spurred the move of Deebo Samuel to that, you know, wide back position, as he calls it, because with Mitchell out, and I'm trying to think of the timing. I guess Sermon was trying to find his way in there a little bit. Jeff Wilson Jr. just wasn't right. Now they re-signed him, of course. I think they're feeling like another year removed from, or a season removed from that meniscus surgery. We'll have him running harder and better. But I don't know that we see the 2021 version of Deebo Samuel if the running back position had remained healthy. But I do think that, you know, 49ers will never pay for a running back. I just don't see that happening. They're never going to pay top dollar. Heck, around the league now, you know, you rarely see a running back selected in the first round of the draft. You rarely see a running back get a second contract, a big contract with their current team, because I think the feeling is that running backs are like buses. You know, you miss out on one, well, here comes another one 15 minutes later. And so there's really no reason to do that. Now, what I'm kind of curious about is if you're talking about Kyle Shanahan scheming guys to get open and all that, getting the most out of their playmakers, what I'm curious about is if now there might be this shift of, you know, all these guys are getting paid big sums of money, but it seems like it's also like the deepest position in the NFL. I'm talking about wide receiver, where every team now has good quality young wide receivers. And, you know, this draft is no different, right? I mean, there will be, I don't know what the number, there will be four or five wide receivers taken in the first round of the draft. And it's also seen as a very good draft for the second, third, fourth, and even fifth rounds. So there has to come a point when you play this whole game of how do you manage your salary cap? Does it make sense to pay huge money for a wide receiver when you can get somebody else at a fraction of the cost and devote that money to other positions? So that might be what the 49ers are wrestling with a little bit here, but now let's go back to Deebo. Like, I wonder what you've reached out to his agent. Mm-hmm. What any word back from there?
No.
Yeah.
They're keeping it all up the sleeve.
Yeah. So basically everybody's kind of letting this fester, I guess, at least publicly. I mean, this becomes the new, like, you know, in high school, did you have Letterman's jackets in high school?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So like you take back the Letterman's jacket, that's the sign of the breakup, right? Now the sign of the breakup is, you know, you unfollow people on social media or you take down photos on social media, and all that stuff is very public. And that's kind of the interesting part of this to me, is that it's very public. He wanted everybody to see it. why did he want people to see it? And why hasn't he come out and said, this is what's up? So there's so much we don't know. And obviously, I mean, we really haven't speculated on why this is. But again, clearly either he is upset or he wants people to believe he's upset about something.
Mm-hmm. Well, and something that has to do with the 49ers.
Yes. Yeah. And I don't think that there was ever any question about if something were to happen, when would it happen? I mean, these things don't get done in March. We're talking about contract extensions. I mean, we can use George Kittle as the kind of the template and Fred Warner. I mean, these deals get done. You know, the old saying is that deadlines spur action, and there's been no deadline. You know, that really, what will be interesting is the 49ers offseason program begins on April 19th. And while Nate Sudfeld and Trey Lance, I'm not sure why I put Sudfeld in front of Trey Lance. Let me do that one again. I think it should be when Trey Lance and Nate Sudfeld are down in Southern California, you know, throwing, and there's some receivers down there. I think Brandon Ayuk is down there. I'm not sure, but I think that's right. But you know, I got word from somebody down there that Deebo Samuel isn't around working out with the wide receivers. And that was, or working out with the quarterbacks. And that wasn't a big surprise at all, because I mean, Deebo Samuel said on this podcast, Super Bowl week from LA, that he wasn't going to be working out in California. In fact, let's listen to what he had to say. It sounded a little bit suspicious.
He said, I'm trying to get him to come down to Miami as well.
Is he telling you, no, you come where I am?
He's just back and forth right now, but I ain't training no California.
Why is that?
That's just not where I'll train at.
So that was a little bit interesting and a little bit cryptic, that he doesn't want to work out in California. He'd much prefer Florida. And
Well, there's also the fact that he's a new dad. So
yeah.
his child is closer to Florida than California.
Okay.
So you can see him wanting to be closer to his child. He was very, you know, emotional about the fact that he's a new dad. That's been on his social media. So that could be a factor, but he's always trained away from California. You know, he trained in Houston with Trent Williams and Adrian Peterson. Mm-hmm. That's where he and Trent Williams became very close. That's kind of sparked that whole bump box entrance with those two at the front. So he's very close to Trent Williams and he's worked out there before. So he hasn't really spent an off season in California. So I don't know if that's necessarily a surprise, but the fact that he sounded a little cryptic about it does make sense, but he, you know, it's not something that he's, you know, it's not like he's spent all the off seasons previously in California and this time he's not doing it.
Right. Yeah. A couple things here. Two things. Kyle Shanahan loves a guy, like, and they have a very good relationship. And, you know, Kyle says, you know, Debo's real. Like when he's talking to Debo, it's real talk. And I think Kyle Shanahan really appreciates Deebo Samuel and I think kind of his selfless demeanor when it came to, you know, this is what we want you to do. And he did it. So you know that Kyle Shanahan's a big fan, but I also think back to after he was drafted, after the 49ers drafted Deebo Samuel, we had Will Muschamp on the podcast, and he was at the time the coach of South Carolina. And the one thing that he told us that he also told John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan was, you got to stay on Deebo in the offseason because – yeah, I think he said he puts on some weight or he gets a little bit out of shape. And, you know, last year he really made that concerted effort to have a very good off season, and that the off season kind of set itself up for the success he enjoyed during the season. So I wonder if that, you know, if the 49ers are concerned at all about him having that great breakout season and then going back to his old ways. I don't think so, because I think that Deebo really enjoyed having the success. Deebo doesn't like the spotlight, right? I mean, he doesn't he said when we talked to him at the Super Bowl that he was very much uncomfortable. He had just gone to a Lakers game, I think it was, and people treated him like a celebrity, and he didn't like that at all. He just wants to be a football player. He doesn't want to seek the limelight. But that's kind of the interesting part about this, is that, you know, by going to social media or not going to social media, he's kind of put his name out there, and now he has people talking about the motivation behind what he's done.
Absolutely. And it's not a surprise that he's been very real. Like you said, he's real with Kyle Shanahan. So I think part of that, he's not going to leave everything up and make it seem like it's okay on social media. He's real. He took it down because that's what he was feeling. I think his relationship with Kyle Shanahan too is, I think it's important. I think it, that because they're so close, that he's not going to do anything where it's direct saying anything bad about the 49ers, but kind of on like, and that's kind of like a passive aggressive kind of thing to take all of the 49ers stuff out. He's not going to do anything direct. He's not going to badmouth the 49ers or Kyle. I think that this was kind of a way to, it's unsubtle to all of us, but subtly say that, you know, they're not, everything's not okay. There's some issues going on.
Yeah. I think that if a team, I don't think the 49ers would reach out to teams about a trade, but I do think they would listen. And the question becomes then, I mean, trust me, I thought that at the time the 49ers traded DeForest Buckner, he was the best player on their team. And so that precedent has been set. Like, they will trade a player that they believe is top-notch and the kind of guy you want to build around. DeForest Buckner, there was absolutely nothing, no red flags, nothing about his off the field, his on the field leadership. I mean, he was like the perfect teammate, the perfect player in a lot of ways. And trust me, the Indianapolis Colts are very happy that they have him.
That took everybody by surprise, right? No one was expecting that. And the talk, just like it has been for Nick Bosa and Deebo Samuel, was like, oh yeah, he's going to be around the team for a long time. He's going to be a 49er for his career. And then the rug just kind of got pulled out from everybody and he became a Colt. That was a big shocker. So I think if Deebo Samuel didn't do what he did to his social media and something happened, it would have been that same complete shock from the fan base and us too, covering the team, that he would be traded. So I'm not saying that it's happening, but if that were to happen without any hints from Deebo, I think it would have been a complete shocker.
Yeah. And it's not like, I remember Joe Staley saying that, you know, I forget the exact timing of this, but it was before, after free agency started. I mean, the timing was about now that I think about it, but Joe Staley was working out and he told DeForest Buckner basically that, hey, I'm going to be retiring here in the coming weeks or whatever the case may be. And DeForest Buckner said, oh, well, that's interesting. I'm going to be traded. So he knew that something was happening, but he remained quiet. So yeah, you just kind of wonder, you know, where this is. And we're not trying to like stir things up or sound the alarms, but I think Deebo Samuel has sounded an alarm that not all is great in his mind about where he stands with the 49ers, or again, he's trying to put that, if nothing else, he hasn't squashed that talk about something is amiss here and what it is, we don't know. The question, I guess, would be though, where the 49ers found a trade partner for DeForest Buckner, who's willing to give up a first round draft pick and also pay him the kind of money that he wanted. Is there a team out there right now that feels like, well, we can't get the wide receiver we want in the draft, so let's give up some pretty substantial draft capital to the 49ers and pay Deebo Samuel top dollar. So those would be the question. The one team that I could think of that would have done that would be the team that got Tyreek Hill, right? I mean, the Miami Dolphins would have been the team where you would say, oh, this makes all the sense in the world because of Deebo Samuel's relationship with Mike McDaniel, Mike McDaniel knowing how to best use Deebo Samuel and everything else. So I tell you what, it's an interesting element of this that kind of came out of nowhere a little bit, because I was fully under the impression that a Deebo Samuel contract extension would get done. I'm not saying it won't get done, but now there's just a little bit more question in the back of my mind. Nah, it's in the front of my mind.
Now, we both were at the owners' meetings, the NFL annual meeting, and that was the word from everybody, from Jed York, owner, CEO, from John Lynch, general manager, from Kyle Shanahan, head coach. All three of them said that Nick Bosa and Deebo Samuel are going to be around for a long time. We took them at their word and still do at this point. But how much do you think that the salaries of Dee Ford, who's a lot of cap space, and Jimmy Garoppolo still being on the roster has an effect on how much money they could give to Deebo Samuel, or what, how that works in the salary cap?
I don't know that the Jimmy Garoppolo thing has much of an impact, because that's, you can see the light at the end of the tunnel there, right? I mean, they can easily do something with that contract once he gets healthy. And we're going to answer some questions on Twitter a little bit later, but I don't really see that 25 million that's being burned on the 49ers salary cap from Garoppolo's contract. I almost kind of see that as, you know, a check that can easily just be ripped up, and then all of a sudden that money appears. You know, the D Ford contract, you know, that leaves a mark for the 49ers, because, you know, they got him in that trade and they were expecting him to kind of help push that defense over the top. And I keep remembering that 2019 season when he was going through his quad issues and knee and trying to get healthy. And Robert Saleh kept saying that he's the guy who unlocks that defense. Well, he was never healthy. You know, at first it was the leg issue. He had the offseason surgery after 2019, expected to come back better than ever in 2020. And then he had the back condition. So there was just so much going on with him. And I mean, when everything plays out, they will have paid him $42 million and he only played in 21 games. And that's including the postseason. So that is a large sum of money for somebody who just basically sat on the roster and wasn't able to contribute. And John Lynch did say that, you know, for all intents and purposes, Dee Ford, you know, will be moving on, whether that's retirement, 49ers release him, failed physical, whatever the case may be. John Lynch painted a picture in which the 49ers don't expect Dee Ford to ever step on the field for them again. So we'll see how that turns out. But I just think when you look at where the 49ers are with the salary cap, and I don't think it's dire right now, but all those guys we mentioned, you know, guys like Kittle and Trent Williams and Fred Warner and Eric Armstead, I mean, those salaries don't stay static. I mean, they're on the rise. And so, you know, they're going to have to do some planning for how you meet those contract demands and everything else, or those contract stipulations where their salaries continue to rise. So, yeah, we shall see how the Deebo Samuel stuff factors into it, if this is much ado about nothing, or whether there really is some discontent there on behalf of Deebo Samuel as it pertains to how the 49ers are handling his situation. Hey, we got a lot more to talk about, and we will after this word from Big O Tires.
Now through April 24th at participating Big O Tires. Come in and buy three, get one free on select Mesa and Cooper brand tires. Plus, save an additional $50 when using your Big O credit card. See store for details and find additional cash saving offers at BigOTires.com.
We are back on 49ers Talk, Matt Maiocco with Jennifer Lee Chan, Chelsea, as my phone calls her. So Jennifer, this is, what year is this, you covering the 49ers with NBC Sports Bay Area?
This will be my, well, because I started mid-season in October 2018, so.
Okay.
Heading so into my fourth?
Fourth October. Year, okay. Yeah, yeah. So basically, other than the 2020 season, you and I have traveled on every road trip. We obviously sit together next to games or during games. But one of the things that we always enjoy, this last season included, and actually most recently, just a couple weeks ago at the NFL annual meeting in Palm Beach, Florida, is we almost always go out to dinner. You find some good spots, and we have obviously not just you and me, but there are other reporters that we socialize with, and we find ourselves talking about the 49ers, which is odd, right?
Very odd.
Yeah, very strange. Yeah. That's what we do, even in our free time. So this is what 49ers Talk is going to be. We're going to kind of take you behind the scenes, and you know, when we meet up on a Saturday night before a 49ers game, and you name the city, and we're talking about the team, this is what 49ers Talk is going to be. We're going to kind of pull back the curtain and over, you know, whatever, fried Brussels sprouts. We're going to be talking about the 49ers. And one of the things that you did at the NFL owners meetings that I don't think I've ever done. I'm trying to think. Yeah, I don't think I've ever done this. You asked a question. What? Never. I don't think. Really? Well, I don't think so. I did have and what I'm talking about is you asked a question of Roger Goodell. There was one time I heard that Roger Goodell was at the 49ers facility, and this was while the whole stadium talks were going on, and I stayed in the parking lot, and when he came out, I went up to him to ask him about 49ers Stadium. You know, this is before Levi's Stadium, before the groundbreaking, and when I think it was before the election down there too. And he just completely blew me off. Just had no, like, did not, I was the last person on the planet he wanted to see. But he wasn't the last person, you weren't the last person on the planet he wanted to see a couple of weeks ago. But you asked a question, kind of take me behind the, tell us what the question was and what you learned.
So first of all, you couldn't find me in the crowd. It was mostly media. It was filled. They had a little tent set up, actually not a little tent, a big tent set up near the Breakers in Palm Beach. And they were passing around microphones. And so I got the microphone and I asked, had there been any talks about reopening the locker room? And if not, are there talks planned to reopen the locker rooms and let us back in? And he replied, nope, we didn't have any talks this week. I don't know if there are any planned. He looked over to Brian McCarthy, who's the head of NFL PR, and kind of had this stumped look on his face. And Brian McCarthy yells out to the whole room, they'll be open.
The locker rooms will be open. And then media, which, you know, were no cheering in the press box. There were some cheers that went up. So that was good. And, you know, for fans who think they don't care, The one thing that I think has been missing over the past couple of seasons with the locker rooms closed is that, you know, we really don't get to get a sense of these guys. You know, we really haven't met a lot of, you know, the rookies of the 2020 class. We haven't met really face to face, and the rookies of the 2021 class, we haven't met. And then, you know, a guy like we talked a lot about Deebo Samuel in that first segment. And I know you would always, you and Deebo would chat quite a bit. I guess it would have been his rookie season. Mm-hmm. And I just think that that's something when you're talking to somebody and it's not just, you know, football, it's about other things. You can really get a sense for just kind of what makes a guy tick and, you know, what he prioritizes. So, you know, we might have a better idea actually what Deebo means by the stuff he's doing if, you know, you or I had been in like more contact with him and just to kind of, I don't know, kind of get a feel for where he might be coming from.
I mean, one thing that, you know, the last time we were in the locker room was after the Super Bowl in 2019, 2020. And that was when we kind of got a sense, I kind of got a sense that Joe Staley wasn't exactly coming back the next year. So when all of that stuff transpired where he actually retired and then they traded for Trent Williams, you know, we talked about it on at NBC Sports. We had stories about it, that there was a possibility that maybe Joe Staley wasn't going to be back for that next season. He was, turns out that he, the injury that he had wasn't allowing him to sleep. He was exhausted. He spoke to us last season. He was with NBC Sports pregame, postgame. Those times that we got to chat off camera, he said he was really not healthy that whole week before the Super Bowl because he was dealing with an injury. And that kind of led to him and his retirement. But being in the locker room that whole week prior, the 2 weeks prior to the Super Bowl, you kind of got a sense that not everything was 100% with him. And those are the little things that we get being in the locker room that help us know kind of what's going on and the shift maybe in someone's personality or their mood. And it lets us tell the story to fans, anyone reading, and just the stories that we can tell and the information that we can give is so much more complete and detailed if we are allowed to have relationships with players and coaches and see them more often, talk to them more often without it being on Zoom.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned on Zoom. I mean, it's been completely awkward. I think maybe it's gotten a little less awkward maybe since Zoom became a thing, but you know, now like our interactions with these guys, and there's no like, you know, small talk and really allowed on Zoom. I mean, you can't talk to a person on Zoom with your other media people watching. And then not only that, but fans are able to watch all this too. I mean, you're not able to like get to know somebody and just, you know, chit chat about mundane everyday stuff like you would if a guy were at his locker, and build that kind of trust and rapport. Now everything is just so, well, not hopefully going forward, it'll be different, but, you know, everything's so stilted and, you know, formal, and there's really no room for any kind of banter because, you know, you ask your question and you're muted, and you know, when you ask a question or allowed to ask a question, you unmute. And I mean, it's just very different. And, you know, I think
not a natural conversation, like you and I are having a natural conversation. The PR has to do their job in kind of regulating who asks questions, but it's not a free-flowing conversation. You can't ask a follow-up if you have one on a question, because sometimes when you're talking to someone on Zoom or like this, they maybe don't understand what you're trying to get at as a question. Yeah. So then you're like, you want a little bit of a clarification, but you can't get that because you've already been muted and they've gone on to the next person. So it'll be nicer to be able to go in and actually have a real conversation with players.
Yeah, and I also think that, and this is touchy over the weekend, or with what happened with Dwayne Haskins, is that there is this kind of tendency to oversimplify players as their only players, right? And I know that that's something that I've kind of grown cognizant of, you know, through the years, is that, you know, when you get to know these guys at their locker, you don't view them, you know, as only football players. You know, they are multi-dimensional people. And I think being able to have that locker room access, you're able to kind of show different sides of the people. I mean, you talked about Deebo Samuel and how his priorities changed after the birth of his child during the season. And so those are the kinds of things that, you know, kind of point to, you know, these aren't just gladiators who show up in armor on Sundays and that's all they are. I mean, these are real people. And I know that's something that you know, you and I have talked a lot about just the personalities, and that to me, that's the most interesting part of our jobs, is getting to know the players on a level where you just don't view them as players and what do they bring to the table as the team, but also kind of seeing how the personalities fit and why some personalities or why some people who might be extremely talented don't succeed in football, whereas other people who may be not as talented but are just kind of wired differently, or whatever the case may be, why they do succeed. And so that's always, and it was really fun. I don't know if fun's the right word, but yeah, it kind of is, like draft time. Like when you meet these guys for the first time, thinking like, you know, is this kid going to make it? Like, is his personality conducive to succeeding at the NFL level? Or, you know, maybe a sixth round draft pick or something where you go, oh my God, this guy's amazing. Why wasn't he, you know, drafted earlier? Bet, man, this is somebody to watch because it means a lot to him. So those are kind of the aspects of covering the game of football that I've really grown to appreciate through the years.
When you look at, you know, a guy like Kendrick Bourne, you see him in the locker room and he's so effervescent and so enthusiastic. You see it on the field to a certain degree, but when you're in the locker room, you see how he interacts with all the other players. I think Juwan Jennings is like that too. You see,
he's the guy, right? He's the guy that I want to meet.
Yes. And we haven't had a chance to have a conversation with him. And I think it's so great for fans also, because all of us go into the locker room. We all go to certain players. Like there'll be, of course, a group around Jimmy Garoppolo or whoever the starting quarterback is, Trey Lance, Trent Williams, but those guys like Juwan Jennings, he's by himself at his locker, someone's going to go up to him. So we're going to get so much better coverage from everybody on our beat. We're not all going to have the same information. There's going to be more stories, more personalities. It's just, it's better for everybody. But yeah, Juwan Jennings, I want to see how he is in the locker room, how he interacts with other players. And also when you look at us being in the locker room, we were there when Harbaugh was there, when Jim Tomsula was there, Chip Kelly. You get a feel for that locker room, and the feel for the locker room since Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch have taken over, since they came to Santa Clara, has been so completely different. I mean, what a different vibe it is. And you can feel that, and it translates on the field. So those are the stories that, you know, I love telling, that give the fans and everybody reading kind of more information. And it, you know, it's just a more complete story, a complete picture about a team.
Okay. So we mentioned Juwan Jennings. I'm going to mention somebody that I'm kind of interested in being around. And then I'm going to ask you the same question. I'm interested in being around Trey Sermon, because here's a guy that, you know, the 49ers selected. They don't usually take running backs as high as they took Trey Sermon. They did take him. From everything I gathered, it wasn't for lack of trying or, you know, toughness or willingness or anything else. It was just kind of, he was finding his way last season, trying to figure out the 49ers, you know, running scheme and the requirements and what else. I remember talking to Maurice Jones-Drew, and he didn't think that Trey Sermon was a good fit for the scheme. So I'm curious about getting around Trey Sermon's locker and kind of seeing his personality and, you know, looking in his eyes and trying to see how important it is to him, and just kind of trying to get a read there. You know, was he frustrated as a rookie who's had all this success at the college level at Oklahoma, then Ohio State? Was he frustrated, or does he see it as, okay, now I know what I need to do? You know, how did he feel about Elijah Mitchell coming in as a sixth round pick and just kind of blowing up and doing a great job? I'm just kind of curious to see or to hear from him kind of where his mind is and what he did in the off season to get himself in position. So that's one guy that I've never spoken to. I've never seen face to face. I've never talked to, you know, whatever. I have no view at all about what makes him tick. How about you? Is there anybody that you think, like, I'm curious to to get to know him a little bit, at least speak to him, interview him, have some sort of conversation to see what he's all about?
I think also that the interesting thing about talking to a guy like Trey Sermon in the locker room is he's not on a podium. He's not on Zoom. So guys tend to open up a little bit more when you're just sitting at the locker room with them and talking. You know, they know they're being interviewed. They know that what they're saying is on the record, but I think it's more comfortable for them to have a one-on-one conversation like that. You know, there's a lot going on in the locker room. Other people are talking, other reporters talking to other players. So it's not like they're standing up there on a podium with a spotlight on them and everybody in the world is watching. So I think there's a comfort there, a comfort level there, where they open up a little bit more, which is kind of interesting too. To me, Javon Kinlaw, I know we've spoken to him. He's talked to us on the podium.
Not really though. I mean, I'm just saying podium doesn't count. I hate podiums. I hate podiums. I hate Zoom.
But he's a guy who's interesting to me because he's had so many different little things like the hunting, and you know, those are conversations that are great to have.
You're talking about the squirrel in his mouth.
Yes, I am. And you know, just what it's going to be like, what he's like in a regular conversation. We've never talked to him face to face. He's been on Zoom a couple times. Mm-hmm. He's been at the podium a couple times, but he's very quiet. It'll be interesting to see, you know, how he opens up when it's just face to face and you're just having a conversation. Yeah. You know? So he's a guy who's interesting to me.
Yeah. What's funny is I think it was his rookie season. I was talking to Kiana Martin. Kiana, obviously, formerly of 49ers.com. Now she's at the MLB Network. So she had, you know, being with the 49ers, she had a little bit more access, I guess you could say, than us reporters on the outside. But I remember one, I think it was Kinlaw's rookie season, where I asked her, are there any rookies that you've gotten to know a little bit and you're kind of like, you really like, you know, anyone that you've kind of built a bond with, or just somebody that, you know, in speaking to him, you really like? And she said Javon Kinlaw. Like, she really liked his personality and just the way he approached things and everything else. And that's something I never would have known that. Seriously, right? I never would have guessed his name as being one of those people because we haven't been around him. So, and he's a guy who there's a lot on his shoulders this season. And I've seen video of him running. He looks good. No pain in that knee, no swelling in the knee for the first time. So that's kind of what we hope to bring you, Jennifer and I, as we plow through our 49ers talk season, bringing you the personalities and kind of the behind the scenes stuff of what's going on with this team. We did ask, as Jennifer announced on social media, her foray into 49ers talk, solicited questions, and we'll be back after this break and we will answer some of those questions from folks on Twitter.
Win a Lexus, cash, and more this month at Graton Resort and Casino. Play to enter the $300,000 Drive Away in Luxury Lexus and Cash giveaway on April 29th, where you could win a Lexus. Plus, more ways to win than anywhere else. Multiplier Wednesdays get up to 7 times the points. Thursdays turn points into slot play. And win up to $15,000 in the Good Fortune slot tournaments. Learn more at GratonResortCasino.com. Complete rules available at the Rewards Center.
We are back on 49ers Talk. Hey, you know, in the past, they've always had the NFL's announced the schedules before the draft. But I think the last couple of years, like at least last year for sure, they announced it in May. So that's after the draft. And I don't know if it's because of the 17 game schedule or what, but I think this schedule sets up pretty good for the 49ers. 9 home games and 8 away games. And one of those 8 away games, everything I'm hearing, is going to be Arizona in Mexico City. So that hasn't been announced yet, but that's kind of the expectation. So that would actually be 9 home games, 7 away games, and 1 neutral site game, which probably will be a pro 49ers crowd. all games on the road seem to be. And so that game, I don't know, it could be on Monday Night Football around Thanksgiving time. So we'll see where that turns out. But those are some of the things people are talking about. 49ers home games, NFC West, obviously, also Kansas City, Patrick Mahomes coming to town, the Chargers. Boy, they're facing some good quarterbacks there. Miami will be heading to Santa Clara, Washington, New Orleans, Tampa Bay. I think Tampa Bay has a pretty good quarterback as well. Brady, Tom. And then road games, mentioned the NFC West games, road games at Denver, Las Vegas, Carolina, Atlanta, Chicago. And I think, have you been in every NFL stadium?
I have not. Neither one of us has been in the new Atlanta stadium.
So right. The new Atlanta or the Las Vegas. Yeah. Right. So those are the final two. Well, yeah, the final two. I counted it up last season. I think I've been to like 50 NFL stadiums because a lot of teams have been, you know, used. Well, for instance, I never went to the Anaheim Stadium when the Rams were home there, but I've been to Busch Stadium for the Rams. Went to, you know, the Dome in St. Louis, been to the Coliseum for the Rams, and also now SoFi Stadium. So four home stadiums for the Rams I've been to. So yeah, this will be the first time either of us will be in Atlanta at the new stadium in Vegas. So hey, we talked about asking for questions on Twitter, and the first one comes up from Johnny. Johnny asked, biggest draft needs for the 49ers. And I think this is the time now where we can start talking about draft needs because free agency is not over, but I don't think anybody could be signed at this point where you'd go, oh, that fills that need. So biggest draft needs, I see three of them. I see edge rusher, I see safety, and I see interior offensive line. And interior offensive line, and I think any one of those positions, I think, is best available among those three spots probably for that first pick that the 49ers have, or at least the first pick that they have right now, number 61 overall. But what I'm kind of curious about, like Alex Mack,
that was an interesting one. Like, he hasn't 100% decided whether he's coming back or not. You'd think he would have done the 49ers a solid by kind of deciding before free agency opened up, because they could have gotten some reasonably priced guys to take his place if he didn't want to come back. But he got married in Ireland. Congratulations to Alex Mack. But now the 49ers have to depend on him returning. And, you know, John Lynch said that he is doing everything, he's preparing to play again, but he still hasn't formally said that he's coming back. So,
well, let me ask you this. If I think, even if Alex Mack had told them that he wasn't coming back, I still almost think their plan A would be moving Brunskill to center. I don't know. I mean, or at least that would be in the conversation, because you know that Aaron Banks is going to be a starter mm-hmm. at one of those spots. And then the way they're talking about Jalen Moore too, almost makes you think that they'd be fine with him being a starter at another spot. And then you have Brunskill, but then if you draft a guy, maybe you draft kind of a swing center guard where he can come in and compete right away. You know, we've also seen Colton McKivitz, you know, he can play guard. You know, Jake Brendel was their backup center last season. So I don't know. I mean, I do think that they do have to get more depth on the offensive line. I mean, what do you think about just the composition of the offensive line and how dire of a need it is?
If Alex Mack comes back, I think they're set up pretty solidly. But if he doesn't, then they've got to look to the draft. I think they'll always add depth. But if he doesn't come back, then they're going to need to go get someone on the interior line a little higher than they would have needed to if they knew that he was coming back for sure.
Yeah, but I also think that if you're even if Alex Mack comes back, you're still going to have to set yourself up for the future.
Right.
I mean, that's kind of what they did with Aaron Banks. I have a hard time believing that they drafted Aaron Banks where they drafted him and immediately thought, oh, we'll just sit him for a year. No, I mean, they expected him to be a starter year one. You don't take an offensive lineman there unless you expect him to be a starter. But they got by without him starting, and they feel like they'll be better off for it because, you know, he remade his body. And let's face it, like when we saw him in training camp, it was kind of rough. You know, he wasn't a starter. He didn't look like a starter in training camp. Now, from what we heard behind the scenes, that he remade his body and he looked really good. And Kyle Shanahan said that he was about ready to pull the plug, but I guess he would have taken Daniel Brunskill's place, right?
Right.
So it would have been, you know, elevating him to the starting lineup. And then they got, you know, on a roll and started winning games. And so they didn't do anything there. But no, I think offensive line certainly is in that mix for the first round draft pick. But I think probably the bigger thing would be a starting safety. I think you can get a starting safety at number 61 overall. Mm-hmm. And because right now they don't have a starting safety. Right now, they have three guys that you could look at who would be paired next to Jimmy Ward: Talanoa Hufanga, Tarvarius Moore, who we'll see how he is coming off that Achilles, and then George Odom, the free agent special teamer primarily that they signed from the Colts. So I think you can get, if you're the 49ers, you can get a starting safety at 61, and then edge rusher. I mean, D Ford hasn't panned out. Samson Ebukam is fine. I don't know if he's a starter, and I don't even know if he's really a situational pass rusher. I mean, he's a solid player, but I don't know that he's a difference maker. Maybe he will be year two working with Chris Kocurek, but I think they do need more oomph coming from the edge opposite of Nick Bosa.
I believe all those positions are, I agree with you with that need in the interior offensive line, edge rusher. And again, there's a lot more guys coming out in this draft than there were last year, just because some guys didn't want to go into the draft. They didn't play football the year before. They got another year at college. So, you know, that ups their draft stock a little bit. So you've got a lot more depth coming into the draft this year. And a lot of guys have said it's really deep at edge rusher and in the secondary. So those are good spots for the 49ers to be in with their pick at 61. Like you said, those are definitely points of need for them.
Got another question. This one comes from CLT. Is the run game expected to evolve into something different with Lance as a starter and Anthony Lynn as a coach, along with Trey Sermon, Aaron Banks, and the exit of Mike McDaniel? Will there be some new wrinkles? Yeah, I mean, there will definitely be some new wrinkles. And I mean, the run game will be different. I don't know that it changes because of Trey Lance. And certainly there will be more quarterback, you know, more RPOs in there. But I don't know that it's going to be, I think they'll pick their spots with Trey Lance running the ball, unlike that game against the Cardinals where the spot was basically every snap, it seemed like. I think as Trey Lance grows more accustomed to working in Kyle Shanahan's system and he's able to execute the offense as it's drawn up, you know, they're going to want him to be a pocket passer, but also knowing that, you know, the element of running is very much part of it. But I almost think it would be more, you know, when a play breaks down, just having that element of, you know, on third and seven, when there's nobody open or he sidesteps the blitz or whatever, then he can use his legs to pick up a first down. But I think that, you know, Mike McDaniel is so good at what he does as far as drying up the run game and being creative and all that. You know, it'll be different. I don't know that it'll be anything that an untrained eye necessarily would be able to see, but Anthony Lynn is a very good coach. The 49ers are losing Bobby Turner for this season. They're losing Mike McDaniel, you know, forever, perhaps, as head coach of the Dolphins. But I think the staples of the run game are what they are. I mean, it's the Shanahan run game. It was Mike Shanahan. It's Kyle Shanahan. And, you know, Mike McDaniel is a disciple of that kind of system. So, you know, probably everything that Mike McDaniel learned, he learned from the Shanahans. And then, of course, he's a bright guy. He's taken it and added things. So there will always be new wrinkles. I just don't know that there will be stuff that, unless you're really grinding the film and you are a run game guru yourself, I'm not sure there's anything that we'd be able to pick up on as far as, you know, anything dramatic as far as changes.
Yeah, I really liked Kyle Shanahan's answer at the annual meeting about how he thought when he was with Houston, that's the offense he wanted to run. And then he had another quarterback. Then he had to change his offense. And then he was at Washington. He thought, okay, this is the offense I want to run. Then he had, you know, from different quarterbacks to Robert Griffin. Then he had to change his offense again. So I think that Kyle Shanahan every season is adjusting his offense to the players that he has. And so, of course, there's going to be an evolution with Trey Lance being under center and different running backs in the backfield. I think that's one of his best qualities, is that he can morph his offense and scheme to the players that he has, putting everybody, you know, like they say, into the best position possible. But you really see it with him. And just one of those kind of offensive geniuses where he can see what a player does best and puts them in the position, like Deebo Samuel became the running back last year. He saw what he could do, what he was able to do with his skill set, and framed the offense around him, and it was very successful.
A couple questions here from John Jay. One is there an out for the 49ers with Jimmy Garoppolo's contract? Yes, there is. I mean, it's not guaranteed his money. So as long as he's healthy and can pass a physical, the 49ers can release him and not owe him another penny. And it would be basically a complete savings on the salary cap. But there is an injury guarantee, whereas if they released him and he wasn't able to pass a physical, they'd be on the hook for $7.5 million. That money would offset with if another team signed him. But that's why I wouldn't expect the 49ers to release Jimmy Garoppolo or do anything with him from that standpoint until he's able to pass a physical. So if he's on the roster week one, then he basically gets all of his money. But that's why I just don't foresee anything happening with Garoppolo for quite a while. The other question is Kyle open to bringing in Colin Kaepernick for a tryout? And I don't think so. I think that, you know, that was something that the 49ers talked about, was it 5 years ago? And ultimately decided that that wasn't a direction they were going. And hey, you know, Colin Kaepernick is somebody who has voiced his belief that he is a starting quarterback in the NFL, and that any place that he goes, that's what he wants to be. He wants to be a starting quarterback. And of course, I would think any quarterback would be thinking that, but the 49ers are not looking for a starting quarterback. You know, they're not looking for someone to come in and compete against Trey Lance. Heck, they're not even looking for a backup quarterback, because right now they have two backup quarterbacks. And Nate Sudfeld is a guy that they gave $2 million guaranteed to, and Nate Sudfeld, trust me, he knows where he stands in the pecking order with the 49ers. He and Trey Lance are down in Southern California. They're working out together. I think Nate Sudfeld, and he's another guy I'm looking forward to meeting here. He's a super guy. Nate Sudfeld knows that his role is to be complete support for Trey Lance, help him in any way possible. And his job is not to compete for a starting job against Trey Lance. So that's why I don't think that the 49ers, that's anything at this point that they'd be interested in. And let's face it. I mean, you know, we know why Colin Kaepernick has been out of the league for 5 years. But we also know that he's been out of the league for 5 years. And I just don't think it's something that the 49ers would go down at this stage. And I don't know that any teams will at this point. It was a nice gesture, obviously. And we know, I mean, he's a talented guy, and watching some of the video of him at that Michigan spring game, I mean, he can still throw it with the best of them. But I have a hard time believing at this point that anything is going to be happening on that front, and certainly not with the 49ers.
Yeah, three quarterbacks on the roster is, I think, sufficient. And 5 years is a long time to be out of the league.
And all that said, I think they're bringing in another quarterback. And who knows? I mean, with what happens with Garoppolo, maybe even another couple quarterbacks. But I would suspect it would be an undrafted rookie or some other, you know, veteran guy. Last year they had Trey Lance they drafted. They had Jimmy Garoppolo as a starter. They had Josh Rosen, and they had Nate Sudfeld. And Sudfeld ended up beating out Josh Rosen. So that was for the number three job and just for the practice squad. So they'll be bringing in guys, but, you know, and it's kind of a derogatory term, but, you know, they need camp arms, you know, to kind of help, you know, throw to receivers and everything else. So I think that's what they're looking for. I think their top spots, you know, for the 53 man roster are pretty much set at this point. Let's see here. Oh, here's one as we wrap up this first edition of 49ers Talk with Jennifer Lee Chan. Jennifer, Josh wants to know, how are you going to handle Matt's dad jokes? And I don't think I did any. I'd like played this one straight. Maybe. Yeah. So how are you going to handle it? Are you just going to like shake your head, or are you going to like,
that's usually what I do. You've exposed me to a few dad jokes along our 49ers beat throughout the last couple of years. So yeah, I enjoy them actually.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, yeah. Now that you've just opened the door for me doing several per episode. So all I have to say to you is be careful what you wish for. Hey, Jennifer, I had fun. We talked a lot about Debo. I kind of see now like the Debo story and the Jimmy Garoppolo story are two things that are kind of now sitting out there, where there's a lot of intrigue about where it's going to be going this offseason with both of those guys. And I will say the past week made me kind of rethink my whole Debo thought of what's going to happen, because I really got the sense that both sides, there just wasn't a whole lot of wiggle room for either side. I mean, where contracts are, it seemed like a pretty simple contract to do. And I still think it will be a simple contract to do, but now I'm starting to wonder like which team is going to be doing that contract with him. Maybe that's a little bit alarmist, but just because of Debo's approach to this and how he's kind of put it out there that, you know, there is something going on. We just don't know what.
Yes. Time will tell, but it is an interesting wrinkle to the story, Debo Samuel. And yeah, but I guess we'll just keep watching, keep bringing it here to 49ers Talk, talking about what's going to happen with Debo Samuel and the 49ers.
And until next time, this has been 49ers Talk. And check us out on NBCSportsBayArea.com for all your 49ers coverage. For Jennifer Lee Chan, I'm Matt Maiocco saying until next time.
Thanks for listening to 49ers Talk with Matt Maiocco. Please rate, review, and subscribe for free on your podcast provider.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know, kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Takeoff 15 discount not applicable to partner-operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.